Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to the Downtime Podcast, where we delve deep into the gravity-based side of mountain biking. This week, the podcast is supported by We Are One Composites, and I'm joined by their main man, Dustin Adams. You'll know by now that I'm a massive fan of We Are One Composites wheels, and I'm currently running their Faction 29er rims on my bike. These guys are not only making a product with insane levels of quality, but the ride feel is incredible too. If you're interested in getting your hands on some amazing We Are One carbon gear, then as a Downtime listener, you can get 15% off all stock items during September using the code GIVER15OFF at the checkout. That's GIVER15OFF over at wearonecomposites.com. Head there now and check out what they have to offer. If you're enjoying the podcast, then you can represent the show and support what I'm doing by picking yourself up a t-shirt from downtimepodcast.com/shop. There's four designs there to choose from, and they're all made from a lovely, soft, 100% organic cotton. They're made using renewable energy and shipped to you without any single-use plastics. Don't forget to subscribe to the show for free to get every episode as soon as it drops. And join my newsletter for a weekly dose of interesting bike-related stuff, competitions, products I've been enjoying, and more. You can do both these things at downtimepodcast.com/subscribe. Also, if you've got time to give us a quick review wherever it is you listen, then that's massively appreciated and it really does help other people find the show. All right, it's time for a catch-up with Dustin. We find out more about what it takes to grow a bike brand and also how they've done that during a global pandemic. We chat about just how hard it is to make a bike out of carbon fibre and how they're progressing with their bike project. We also chat about their secret products that aren't even on the website and find out about some of the bikes and products that Dustin has been testing and what he thinks to them. So, without further ado, here's Dustin Adams. Dustin Adams, welcome back to the Downtime Podcast. How's things with you?
Yeah, not too bad. Thanks for having me back. It's been a busy couple of years, and happy to chat about a bunch of We Are One with you.
Excellent. Yeah. A lot has changed in that time. So before we do that, you're nursing a bit of a sore body and head, aren't you, after a big off?
Yeah, I mean, 25 years of riding and racing bikes, and I have to say this last mellow trail crash was probably the hardest crash I've ever had. Just caught a pedal on a little weird stump going the wrong section of trail and couldn't get my hands and or even roll out of it. It was kind of crashing into the uphill of a big transition and basically lawn darted my face into the ground and knocked myself out cold. Got a small bleed on my brain. That's kind of coming through right now. And it's a small shoulder injury, but it's been about a week now and I'm still pretty sore and bruised, but all in all, I'm feeling a little more like a human today.
That's good to hear, man. And a good chunk of time off the bike, I guess, to get over that head injury.
Yeah, I think I'll be down for a solid month before I ride again. It's just the bleed is something I got to take seriously and make sure that doesn't evolve into something much worse for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well, fingers crossed for a good, speedy recovery for you, mate. It's never nice to see people go down like that.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. It's definitely tough.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing I wanted to say before we get into this is a massive thank you to you and We Are One for supporting the podcast, not just this year, but in previous years as well. Because I think, as you know, the start of this year was pretty tough for me to keep things going. And you guys getting on board and supporting a big chunk of the year is a big part of why we're still here and why the podcast is still going. So yeah, just a massive thank you for that. It is much appreciated by myself, and I'm sure the listeners appreciate it too. So thank you.
Hey, I appreciate the thanks, and we really want to see you succeed. I think there's a lot of good things coming out of long form podcasts, and the industry has a lot to tell. And I think this is a great outlet for people to learn behind the scenes and more of what's going on. And I firmly believe in what you're doing, and we're really happy to continue supporting you even as we go on here. So it's awesome what you're doing, and keep it up.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. So yeah, let's talk a little bit about We Are One and how things are with you guys. And I guess, like, to start off with, we've probably got to talk about COVID, because it's it's hard to ignore, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of a part of our lives now, isn't it?
It is.
Wow. That sure has changed everything, hasn't it? It's been an emotional roller coaster, I'm sure, for everybody out there in the world. And, companies are not immune to it at all. And we thought for sure this was going to be a really challenging time for us. And took some pretty long, hard looks at the books and where we were sitting and where we were positioned for the year. And, you know, come March, it was, you know, a little bit of a dip, and we thought, okay, here we go. The roller coaster is beginning. And lo and behold, out of nowhere, it's like everybody decided, the heck with it. We're going to ride bikes and buy bikes. And yeah, it's as crazy it is to say this. And, you know, we're going to take a win here, and it's okay to be thankful, but yeah, we're way up. We've had almost 230 to 260%, depending on the month, up in sales and in demand. So it's been a really challenging year with growth that there's no way we could ever have planned for and forecasted for. And yeah, it's challenging keeping up with demand. There's no doubt about it. Our lead times are way out there right now, and we're hiring like crazy. I think we've hired, what are we at now? 12 employees since COVID started. So it's been pretty crazy for us, for sure.
Well, that's on top of, I mean, you were already growing at a fair rate, I think, before that increase,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, we're at 30 employees now at WeRR1, and we're just hiring another 7 as I'm sitting here talking. I have interviews the rest of this week to hire an entire night shift. So we should be around 40 employees by the end of 2020.
Whoa, impressive stuff, man. And yeah, like, how do you approach hiring then? Because you've been putting out some little videos of a couple of the members of your staff in their job roles, and there's a bit of them riding in there as well. And it looks like you're picking up some pretty amazing riders as well as employees.
Yeah. I mean, we come from, you know, Kamloops is an industrious town. There's a lot of kids that ride here and a lot of people that enjoy mountain biking. And I think they would love to see that kind of transfer into their daily lives and into their job opportunities. And being that we're the only player really in town as a manufacturer, it's been great to pick off some of these really young, talented dudes that want to share the passion of cycling. And we give them that outlet to also create a job and a lifestyle and a living out of it. And we're really, really fortunate to have all those young, talented people around in our town. And we're just continuing to grow exactly like that. And it seems like every day we're getting more and more resumes with talented riders or people that ride or want to, you know, change direction in their career from, you know, industry because of ups and downs to cycling, and they're seeing a boom and the effect that we're having on the local economy. And it seems to be almost at this point kind of easy to pick up really talented people. So yeah, we're really stoked to have that available to us here in Kamloops.
Yeah, that's good to hear. But I mean, irrespective of COVID, like I said, you guys were growing, you know, strongly. What do you think's been the key to success for you guys? Like, why are people gravitating towards the brand?
Yeah, we keep a really low key. I don't think we're really big in marketing. There's still people that come to us and say, you know, we just found out about WeRR1 and we're really interested in the product. And I think that right there has always been our focus. We've focused on making quality product, rim after rim after rim, or handlebar after handlebar after handlebar. Any of the products we make, that's been our main focus. And I think people are starting to see and believe that, you know, the people that are saying our product is substantially better than most out there and we're leading the industry in quality and repeatability, they're starting to believe in it, and they're buying it, and they themselves are having that exact same experience. So I think our product is what's separating us. And I think that just the fact that we have the best quality control out there and the best repeatability out there in the market. And I think we're finally getting our stride and people are starting to take notice.
Yeah. So is it fair to say that having that manufacturing capability in-house rather than sourcing parts from somewhere else has been a big part of it, because that's how you control that quality and that repeatability of the product?
I mean, absolutely. We live it, sleep it, and breathe it every day. We don't have any questions when it comes to one rim, how it was made, or if there was a problem. Every single thing we do, we know what's going on, from the carbon roll that comes in to the person that made it, to how it was laid up, to how it was cured, how it was drilled. Throughout the entire process, we know everything every day. We have a set lot of rims that we manufacture in a day, and we continue to just keep on that stride and keep on that field and grow as much as we can. And we've been doing that fairly well over the last 2 years, but we still haven't lost focus on quality, quality, quality.
Yeah, cool one. And you've got this tagline of we work, we ride, we repeat. And a lot of big businesses sort of on a corporate scale, they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and have huge focus groups on these slogans, and then they never really mean very much. But how did that kind of come about for you guys? Because it feels like that is what you, how, you know, it's how you guys live.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about this for a long time and drawing up some strategic plans for We Are One over the last year and a half, and this one kind of came to me out of the blue. And I think it speaks to kind of the blue collar nature that We Are One has, and we are first and foremost a manufacturer, and I want to show our guys that, hey, you know, unfortunately in today's day and age, you do have to work, and you should show pride in what you do, and that comes first. And if you look at life that way and you put your best foot forward and you do great work, then you get to enjoy the good times and you get to ride. And the focus for us is to make great parts, get out there and enjoy it, and continue to do it day after day. So the tagline, we work, we ride, repeat, is just that. You know, all of our guys, and you can see it on the faces on the factory floor, and the people that are involved are deeply invested in the product, they're deeply invested in the brand, and we give them that opportunity to work in the industry, to go out every day and ride their products that they make, and meet people on the trails and meet people in other places throughout the country and the world that are riding the product that they actually made, and they get to come back and do it again. So it's very simple. It's very cut, but that's what we're proud of. And we want to make sure we share that.
Cool. And do you guys get to ride together quite a bit? Like, is there a shop ride out? And
yeah, we have
events like that.
World Cup Wednesdays, every Wednesday, it's go out and see who can hang. It's gotten pretty vicious over the last 2 years, and you better bring your A game if you want to be at the front. There's no doubt about it. But we let all comers and everybody, you know, come out and have a good ride, and we have a few beers after, and the company puts on a little bit of a barbecue each Wednesday for that. And definitely the talent is stepping up its game, and it's getting pretty ridiculously fast out there on Wednesdays. So it's I would say it's one of the fastest rides in town for sure.
And that crew is just getting bigger and bigger, I guess.
No, I'm struggling to even keep up now.
Well, and you're an ex World Cup racer, so that's saying a bit.
Yeah, it's a long time ago. I'm pretty washed after that. So,
fair play. So, what are the kind of challenges that you've had with growing? Because growing a business is a lovely problem to have, but it's not easy.
Oh, I mean. I think the biggest thing is just customer understanding. It's not a challenge, but that's been like, I think where we spend most of our time is explaining, like, we are a small manufacturer. We make great products, but you're going to have to unfortunately wait for this because we just don't have thousands of these things on the wall sitting there. And I don't have a labor force. Like, I can put in a larger order and boom, it arrives at the door. So our biggest challenge is obviously manpower and making enough to meet the demand. This year has been completely insane. Like, no one could plan for this. I don't care how good you are in business, it's just impossible to deal with. And right now it's getting that ramp over and over again. I mean, we ramped from 2019 to 20, we ramped up 40% on our manufacturing output. We were able to bring on Industry 9 as a manufacturer, or sorry, I guess we're not as a manufacturer, we're making their product for them. So that was kind of meant to curb a lot of that demand. And we thought we had everything running great coming into March. We were building a bit of stock and inventory, and boom, out of nowhere, that inventory disappeared in less than 2 weeks. And then we were like, well, and then, you know, what do you do as a business owner? He's like, okay, well, COVID-19, here we go. Do we hire 20 people? And do we grow the business throughout this? Because this is a time when most people are saying, pump the brakes, whoa, 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 you shouldn't be doing anything. And we're seeing a completely different story. So, I mean, it was really, really tough to actually jump up and say, okay, commit to this growth and kind of run with it. And that's been our biggest challenge for sure.
Yeah. And you've moved into a bigger facility as well throughout this.
Yeah, we actually kept our old facility. That's our R&D facility for the bike project. And yeah, we've expanded into a 5,000 square foot facility now, where we were able to shift both our night and our day shift into one day shift now. It runs 12 hours a day. We, you know, increased output almost 40% just based on that move alone. And we grew out of that already. So yeah, 4 months in, we're like, this is too small by a lot. So yeah, we're currently, working with an architect to, we bought the facility. So we have a whole bunch of land out in the back and whatnot. And we're working with an architect right now, drawing up, it's almost 15,000 square foot, three-story addition that's going to probably start breaking ground early next year.
Incredible. That's mad. And did you do the move during COVID, or was that done before?
We shut down on a Friday and we reopened on a Monday. So it was a bada bing, bada boom. So pretty easy move. To be honest with you, we had everything pretty well set up. All we had to really transfer over that was difficult were our molds. We had already pre-set up a nice, beautiful new pressurized layup room that had everything ready to go. And then obviously just getting stride in the new building, everything's new. So it took about a week to kind of get up to full speed. And then once we were up to full speed, it was really straightforward. But yeah, we didn't really miss a beat. It was a pretty easy move. We had a new ovens over there. So we started with one oven. Now we've got three ovens. Much bigger facility. We have got a new drilling room with a new automated drilling machine, a bunch of other stuff in that new building. Is pretty sweet. And everybody's got a lot more room to move, a lot more light and some office space and stuff like that. So it's been a really, really nice addition.
Nice. And what about your role then in everything? Has that had to change as it's got bigger and as you've taken more people on?
Yeah. I mean, it's for me, this is the first time I've grown a company to the point where now I'm starting to infill management. I've never really had that before. So yeah, hiring a general manager currently and looking kind of in the, got the feelers out for that. We've got a production manager. We've got a lot more help for my role so that I can do more high level kind of adjustments on the other projects that we're working on, work with our engineers over at the R&D facility and continue to kind of push new projects out the door and get them to market. So a lot of that focus for me has been shifted away from the actual day-to-day at the shop so that I can focus on continuing doing what I feel that I'm best at, and that's bringing new product to the market.
Yeah, well, let's talk a bit about new product, because we've spoken, a couple of times in the past about you guys making your own bike. I think it was All Systems Go the first time we spoke, and then you'd put the brakes on last time we chatted about it because it had got a little bit complex, I guess, and it wasn't the right time to be pushing forwards with it. What's the latest on that?
I guess you could say we're learning that making a bike is very, very hard. I think it's probably one of the most underrated things that a lot of people take for granted. It's a lot of complexities that go into that frame that you just, you know, chunder down the trail on. And we're learning that the hard way, I think, day in and day out. And we're getting our asses handed to us. It's been about a year now. And it's a very challenging project. We're at the drawing board again on a few little things that we've learned throughout the process. And when you make your own product, that's the challenge. I mean, we could have taken our design and had a bike no problems by now without any issues if we would have went to Asia. But when you have to actually make every single part, from the pivots to the molding to the tooling to anything that's going to make that frame ready to go from outside parts, it's very, very complex. And I think we underestimated a lot of it. We've had to bring on a lot of engineering strength and in the last 3 months to help us get back on track. The design has made a few little iterations along the way, and we have to cut new molding again. So that was a big lesson there. And we hope to be ready for spring 2021. But right now I'm more focused not so much on the deadline, but just learning as much as we can about the process so that when we do come to market, the bike is phenomenal and we haven't missed any beats on it. That's for sure.
Yeah. So is the challenge more in the sort of manufacturing elements of all the different bits that make up the bike, or more in, I guess, the understanding of the bike engineering itself? So like the geometry and the characteristics and the strength and everything of the frame.
Yeah. I mean, so the, we've got a really cool, it's like a data acquisition machine that we've linked up to a few bikes that we've been riding all year. So I think we understand very, very well what the bike's real world need to achieve for strength and for stiffness and stuff like that. That's not been a big challenge. Kinematics and geometry, again, I think we know what we want. That's pretty straightforward for us. I think that's, we're not looking to revolutionize anything there. I think that you'd be hard pressed to hop on any bike out there today and be like, yeah, they're garbage. I couldn't ride that thing. So I think we're all really, really well versed on that. But when it comes down to how do you make carbon fiber behave in its best possible characteristic that no one else has been able to achieve, and kind of change the game on the manufacturing process that they normally take in Asia or in anything else that we've got knowledge on. That there has been the biggest challenge. Carbon fiber can be a bit of a bugger when it comes to a frame. Not gonna lie to you. There's parts on a frame that it can be a real problem to work with, and you have to look at all elements of that problem and come up with solutions. So it could be geometry, it could be angles, it could be articulation throughout how the fiber is going to lay up as a ply. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it, and that's where we're learning. We can't just come up with the design and look, oh, it's all great on CAD, and then just boom, it's going to come together, no problem, in the mold. That's just not that way. You got to really look at all of those things together, and I think that's where we're at. I guess we've been at for the better part of 3 months now. We've been looking at it with a deep dive with a team of engineers, and we're learned a lot. We're going to make some adjustments on geometries. We're going to make some adjustments on the design so that the actual manufacturing process is first and foremost achievable. And the process that we're working on is something that no one has done yet in the industry.
Okay. Interesting stuff. On the wheel side of things, something that you guys have done very well is to get that balance between kind of stiffness and compliance that makes the product very, very good to ride. And I think that challenge just gets even tougher when you kind of translate that across to a bike frame. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah. I mean, the biggest challenge is what do you want out of a frame? That's the cool thing about carbon fiber. It's the same thing with the rims. It's like, what are you looking for out of that product when you ride it? So we focus on what we call ride feel, and that's how, you know, the rider perceives and feels what's happening underneath him on the bike when he rides, and stiffness, the way the bike loads and unloads, how it behaves laterally and linearly while you're riding the bike, you know, taking all of the other elements out of the actual ride. So, you know, suspension and you know, anything else that kind of tires and stuff like that, anything else that kind of plays into that very dynamic element. But how do you singularly point that one thing out and say that's a benefit that we want? And that's what we've been really doing a deep dive on with our data acquisition machine, to figure out why this behaves the way it does and what makes it feel so good, and then translating that over into the actual layout.
So is that's something you can tune within with the same mold? You can affect that by changing the way you lay up the carbon into the mold, the way you orient the fibers, the kind of layering system that you use, and that enables you to tune that stiffness and then go ride it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I spent 6 months last winter. I started pretty much as a hobbit, lived at the shop on our bar. So we completely redesigned our bar and learned so much through the layup, through the behavior, the characteristics that you can tune into the product from one layup to the next, based on individual layers being different from one bar to the next. And we're not talking multiple layers, like change one layer, completely different product. Wow. So, yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of carbon fiber that a lot of people, I don't know if the industry's done a very good job at telling people about that. You know, you got aluminum that's very kind of homogeneous. It doesn't really have stiffness characteristics one way or the other. It's just kind of a, I mean, for the sense of it's a blob of metal. Where with carbon, we have that ability to tune and to make it have characteristics that will be over and above and better performing than the standard metals.
And how much kind of difference have you found through those layup changes in something like the handlebar? Is it something that a very experienced rider will feel, or do you think you could get a fairly kind of novice rider onto those different bars and they'd still feel that difference?
Yeah, our goal with the bar, I think, was to have a comfortable bar that wasn't going to jar your teeth out, but not be so flexible that you're like, whoa, this is really vague and I'm not sure of what's going on. So the goal was to change the shape, change all everything we could change on. It was a ground up project again, because I wasn't really 100% happy with our original bar. And I don't think we were really on point there. So we wanted to take even more stiffness out of it, increase the strength a bit, but not to the point where it's absurd and it's unnecessary. So we went and we did real world testing on the bar to say, okay, well, what's the likelihood of full load on this bar? What does that look like in real? And you do a 10-foot drop to flat. How much force are you putting through this? So we took all the data we could, not relying on, you know, other test protocols to say, well, this is what you need to have a good solid bar to make it to market. But we designed our own around our own knowledge that we've gained through the acquisition. So the goal was to make it even more comfortable, take out that small chatter, that high frequency vibration that you can get through the bar sometimes, and try to cut that out as much as you can. And so far, the bars that we have had out in the real world, people testing it have had very favorable results. They can definitely say they feel it. And, you know, the testing in the FEA and the actual fatigue test replicates that. So it seems like we're going in the right direction. And I can say that right now I'm confident that we have a great product there. And we just, you know, we're so busy. It's secretly launched on the back end, and we've been selling the 20, the 27 and a half and the 35 mil bar to people that inquire, but we haven't even released it yet. And we've had that for almost 6 months now. It just can't keep up. So it's an off the menu bar that no one knows about that people, you know, if they ask, get. So it's pretty interesting the way that's been going.
That's pretty cool. So it's just spreading by word of mouth.
Yeah. I mean, we've kind of sneaked it out there here and there and let people kind of tease it a bit. But yeah, we were going to launch it, and then COVID hit and we kind of backed off, and we didn't end up making the launch to Pink Bike when they did the kind of their big virtual kind of makeup for what happened at Sea Otter, what we lost there. And continues to grow and the orders come in. So we're kind of like, okay, we'll just pretend it's not even there for now. So
yeah. And they go through some pretty hellish durability testing. I'm sure I saw a video somewhere of one of your bars being cycled kind of with vertical load, and it was crazy. I mean, the amount of deflection that you're putting into that bar is pretty amazing. I think most people would expect a carbon bar to be snapping or tearing or breaking at that point.
Yeah, the full yield is always like, it's such a cool thing to see how much movement you can get out of that. And then you're looking at the force going, holy crap, that's like, you do the math on that and it's pretty astounding to see what it can take. I mean, some of the forces in those videos were upwards of 250 kilograms per side load. And it's like a, you know, multiple loads of that over and over again. And you're like, that's something a human can't just, it's physically impossible to do. So I mean,
your body would crush into the stem before you managed to put that kind of load through, I would assume.
Yeah. And I think the cool thing is what we learned through that is like, okay, well, how far can we take it? So we maxed out at 270 kgf. That's where we're like, okay, that's full yield. We can't get any stronger than that. I mean, I'm sure we could if we went to like a T1000 fiber and we really, really increase the stiffness to the point of ridiculousness, and there's no problem. Yeah, I get that. But we yielded out at 270 and we went, okay, well, let's see what real world is and what should our focus be. And it was, we backed it down and we focus more on fatigue. So we took what we were using before, which was we had the luxury of kind of following a German engineering firm's test protocol. And mm-hmm. we said, okay, well, if that's their test protocol for downhill, and their full yield on that test is pretty good. It's just above 200. And we said, okay, if that's what they consider a downhill test, well, let's see if we can focus on fatigue and focus on stiffness. So we doubled fatigue, and then we made our yield just below theirs, because I still don't think that that's even reasonable number to hit, because a human just can't even come close to that. Even a human can't come close to plus 200 kilograms of yield both sides of a bar. Impossible. You will crumple before you even get close to it. So why are we testing to that limit? This doesn't make any sense. We should be focusing on fatigue, to make sure that we get the longest life cycle out of that bar possible.
Yeah. And so everything that you've learned about how to tune the layup on that bar, I guess that kind of helps inform your decisions on the bike. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The bars have a dynamic kind of FEA on it. You got buckling forces, you've got tensile strength forces, you've got, you know, kind of everything going on a handlebar. So yeah, definitely. And it is a tubular shape, so it does translate over to a bike for sure, as far as, you know, how you want to make your tubes, and you get your strength out of a tube, and then you can work on other geometries from there. But a bike altogether, it's more of the complexities of the layup in those little kind of tight little areas where you're struggling to get the fiber to do what you want it to do, ideally in an ideal situation, and not, you know, just putting chop strand in there or filler in there to make a kind of fill a void. You want every ounce of fiber you can taking load and doing what it should do in that bike. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think our focus is now shifted to. And I think I can confidently say, based on the reverse engineering that we've done on a lot of frames that we've cut apart and analyzed, that there's some very big variations on how people manufacture carbon bikes out there. And we've learned a lot about kind of how some companies do it, and how some companies do it right, and how some companies do it wrong. And when you really dive into the guts, and you're taking, you know, $4,000 bikes and cutting them apart, that's when you really learn how good something is.
Yeah. What's your view then on the sort of general quality of the carbon fiber work that you're seeing in the bike industry? Because like you say, there's a big difference between a high quality carbon product and something that's got filler all over the place and maybe isn't quite as well thought out.
Yeah. I think what I'm learning is that I don't think anybody's doing it wrong. It's just that everybody's doing it a little bit different. I mean, if someone was doing it wrong, you would see catastrophic failures and people crumpling themselves into lawsuits that the lawyers would just love to get involved in. And we've had that fortunate experience that doesn't happen. So I can't say that I haven't seen anything glaringly like, holy crow, this is completely insane. But there's things that are definitely interesting. I mean, bonded in head tubes, which you know, if you were to say that to a person on the street, they would probably freak out and say, that's insane. And it makes a lot of sense. It's a very difficult part to manufacture and to get tolerance on and, you know, to make fibers behave the way you want them to. Yeah. And bonded in, you know, bottom brackets, stuff like that. Bonded in pivots. There's some companies do multiple thin laminate while they build up their layers. Other companies do extremely heavy bulk laminate and they're only doing 4 or 5 layers. So there's a lot of different approaches out there. You see a lot of interesting kind of void filling products that are in the frames, from expanding foam to silicon that's left in behind. People that don't even take their bladders out. There's a mixed bag of everything out there. And some of them are, you know, legitimately good bikes and they have no problems. But I think overall, I look at all the frames we've had, not one frame is without something where you're like, hey, they could have done that a little bit better. And I think that's where we're learning is like, okay, well, how do we take all those little nagging errors that we were like, it's not perfect. It'll work, but it's not perfect. And just resolve everything. And I think that's where the way we're going to lay up a bike is going to be a much better solution to that.
Yeah. Do you think it's possible to work to that level and still come to a price that people are willing to pay? Because that's always the big trade-off, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be doing this if I couldn't compete with Asia. There's no way. I think that if we look at the whiteboard as to what we're trying to achieve, and we do hit the target of how we're going to lay this bike up, without question, we'll be able to compete. Will I be able to scale to thousands of frames on the same, you know, the same level as Asia? No. Do I want to? Mm-hmm. No. So I just look at it realistically and go, this is what I want. This is what I want to make. And our goal year one is to make 300 frames. And our goal after that is to increase by 20% until we hit kind of our capacity limit. So I have a very reasonable goal. And I think that if we can make the bike behave and lay up and come out as accurately as we want, just like our rims, we could beat Asia. And I think we could surprise a lot of people with the quality and the price point that we come to the table with.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And how are you getting on with correlating the real world numbers with the predictions that you get from software like FEA? Because carbon is, I think, fairly, or certainly was, a very hard material to model and to predict. Mm. Is the data that you're getting from your data acquisition kind of in line with what you forecast based on analysis tools, or is it a case of just it points you in the right direction, but you've really got to go and test it?
You really got to go and test it. Yeah, there's, I mean, okay, like a top tube, down tube. Yeah, that's easy. It's great. It's very straightforward. It's you know, it's semi-dynamic, but it's not a big deal. Yeah, when you look at complexities of how the fiber lays up around a pivot, you know, stuff like that, it's very, very difficult to tune that and figure out how strong it really is. You got to take that out in the real world and beat on it and make sure it's going to hold up, put it through the fatigue rig, stuff like that. Not really much you can do other than that, to be honest with you. We have, I would say, undoubtedly the best carbon FEA and carbon software available to the market. I don't even know if anybody in the industry is using it right now. And it's a $50,000 a year seat, individual seat, for one of our engineers to use. And it's a really, really cool software that allows us to take our product and lay it up, perform FEA, confirm or deny whatever we want to change along the way, and then take that envelope and lay it flat on a cutting machine and actually come out with a layup that we can put into the mold and go out and make a bike that's accurate. And that's a really, really powerful tool that we've had for 3 months now, and it's leapt us so far forward that it's not even funny. And yeah, we're looking to get the real world testing now done through the bike to make sure it's all saying what it's supposed to be doing.
Awesome. So have you had the chance to ride something that you think is pretty close now?
No. We've had a mold for, when did we finish the mold? We finished the mold in February, and we just keep running into challenges with the actual way we want to lay it up. We were working with a design engineer that we still are. He works for us. He's coming to Canada here pretty quickly. But we worked through kind of the initial iterations of how we would do this. And within the first 2 hours of doing that, I said, this is no way that we're going to be able to scale this. This isn't what we wanted to do from the ground up. And we have those tools still, and we just haven't been able to successfully pull something out of the mold that I'm like, yep, that's good quality. We can go ahead and ride it. It's very old school, I guess you could say. I mean, it's clamshell molding. It's something that's been being done in the industry for a long time, but I just don't think that's how bikes should be made, and it's not going to make the best quality product. So mm-hmm. We've got all of these, we've made 5 or 6 front triangles, I think, and we've attempted 3 rear triangles, and we tried to do the rear triangle in one piece thinking that was going to be achievable, and the complexity of that is just completely over the top and I don't think necessary. So we've stepped it back to a 2-piece system now, and we've pulled out successful products out of that, and we now have a frame that we can kind of toot around in the parking lot to test, you know, hey, does it feel right and whatnot. And in the coming weeks here is when we're hoping to lay down a good layup and take the FEA, what we have, and go out and test an actual proper bike with the flat patterns that come out of the software and stuff like that. So we're close, closer than we ever have been, but we're also back at the drawing board. That bike isn't really even going to be the bike we're going to go to market with. So,
and is that because of kind of the progression of bikes in general over the period of time that you've been working on it, that you're going to end up kind of making new molds to update geometry and stuff, or are there other reasons that's going to change?
No, it's all based on scaling and manufacturability, to be honest with you. Okay. We haven't changed anything on our kinematics, anything on our geometry. We had original plans to go out and make, you know, one bike that could do all and have many options. And I think we've shelved that product because it's not achievable. And we're really understanding why the industry is the way it is right now. And I think that's where, you know, we've accepted and now we're adjusting and moving forward. And we're not starting all over again, so to speak, but we're starting with a much better understanding of why and what it is we need to achieve and what we need to do to make it there. So.
Yeah, you must be pretty excited to swing a leg over one that you can get out and have a proper ride on.
Yeah, I it's one of those things, you know, you're really excited. You've wanted, let's go full steam ahead. And I think that was the biggest problem, where we overlooked a lot of those really, really key details in the initial run. And I think now I'm like, as much as I'm excited, and I'm also more, I'm like, nope, let's just sit and think this through for a couple more days and make sure this is the right move. So I'm taking more of a calm, leveled approach to this to make sure that the next one that we do, mold design and layup design and the way that we're going to put it into the mold, is much different. And it's the exact way we need to be able to scale off of.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's been a very challenging project and clearly a lot of investment in man hours and money gone into it. What's made you persevere with it?
Stubbornness, I guess. I know we can do it. And there's just, you know, I don't think that anybody would want to take this on just out of the sheer, if you put, how can I say this? If you put carbon fiber into the frame mold, the way that we originally went off, and you have any bit of composites knowledge and understanding of how fibers need to behave, you would have put the first three layers in and went, there's a problem here. This is not going to work. And that's the way the industry is currently running. So we did that and I went, no. And my engineer and my machinist came back to me. We had a meeting after the first two came out, and I was like, I just said, guys, this isn't going to work. We need to completely change this. This is completely ridiculous. And both of them looked at me like I was high as a kite and I didn't know what I was talking about. And I was like, no, we just can't do this. This is not going to work. And we made two or three more and they both kind of come to the table. We had a huge argument about it and everybody kind of slammed the doors and went they're each their own way. And after the next couple iterations, they started to come around and kind of seeing what I was seeing. And I was like, we can't do this because we wouldn't be able to train somebody to do this. We wouldn't be able to manufacture this day after day. And there's too many kind of intuitive steps that you have to understand how to lay up and why you're doing what you're doing to be able to make this successful. So it's going to fail. So we shelved that for the better part of 2 months and just went back to the drawing board on manufacturability and mold design and what we're calling like a removable mandrel. So once we get that system figured out, and we're very, very close on that, I think we'll be more excited. But yeah, and I'm in no rush at this point.
Cool. Well, I look forward to seeing it. It's always something I'm intrigued to find out about and hear how you're getting on. So it'll be good to see it if it breaks cover early part of next year.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely have something to show as far as having it for sale. You know, we hope to get there at some point next year for sure.
Cool. What else have you got going on at We Are One then? You're not guys to stand still. What have you been tinkering with?
The frame has definitely taken up a lot of our time. With COVID, we've been so overrun on just the day to day that we haven't had much time to tinker with too much, but we've got some new rims in the works that we're working on right now, playing with other materials, testing some thermoplastic stuff that I'm not super excited about, but, Yeah, working on other parts that we can manufacture and put onto the bike, and trying to figure out, you know, how that project's going to roll out and what it's going to look like and how we're going to go to market with it. It's more that kind of stuff I've been focusing my time on. And I think the factory's just so busy and backlogged at the moment. We've just been charging hard on getting our current product out to the market so they can enjoy it.
Yeah, what are the lead times like at the minute? Is it very hard to keep up?
I wish I could say it's a week, but yeah, we're right now we're at 8 weeks behind on manufacturing. It's a real struggle. Yeah, we've been really thankful. I mean, we've got some unbelievable customers that are super stoked to wait, and they want to be a part of the project and whatnot. And we've been seeing orders come in from some other companies at large, and kind of juggling a lot of those into our schedules and stuff like that. And you know, and then we have Industry 9 kind of, you know, in the same position we are, demanding more product than they've ever wanted at the beginning. So it's been very complex, but I think it's, all in all, I have to say that we've got some great and understanding people out there that are willing to wait, and we're delivering a great product, and when they get it, they're generally excited that they waited as well.
Yeah, well, and you're not alone by a long way. I think there's so many people that have got bike orders they're waiting for, you know, 3, 4, 5 months for, and even just getting simple stuff like, you know, a set of tires or something that you would normally just expect to arrive next day is proving difficult. So it's I mean, it's a good problem for the industry, but it's a challenge for everyone, I think.
Yeah, I think that there's no one, and that's kind of, yeah, no one's in the, is left unscathed at the moment, I think, from this. I think everybody in the industry is feeling it and dealing with it. You see what's going on in bicycle retailer right now, like people can't deliver. I've been talking to dealers that are saying like they want to book a whole bunch of bikes, and they're like, yeah, maybe by March next year you'll get that booking order. So if anything, we're in a fantastic position, and now I can see that moving forward, you know, this is probably the best position anyone could ask for. And we just now need to triple down on our manufacturing capacity and output so that we can really, really ramp up for the coming year and for the rest of this year. So that's been our focus. I don't think we could ask for a better position, to be honest with you. But yeah, it's just making sure that everything's right before you make that move was the biggest challenge.
Yeah, for sure. So looking outside of We Are One then, what's kind of intriguing you? What's impressing you out in the rest of the bike industry at the moment?
Oof, there's a lot. I mean, I think everybody's been doing some really cool stuff lately. We've got a lot of cool new smaller carbon startups from, you know, people making carbon spokes, carbon fiber spokes in the US. We've seen some more manufacturing come back to North America, and some really cool stuff coming out of Europe as well. Really interested to see the lower cost bikes come out from like Privateer, and you know what Ruben's doing over at Raw. There's some cool stuff. You got Giacomo at 77 Designs. If anything, the biggest thing that I see is that there's some really passionate guys out there taking a solid run at what they're doing and enjoying bringing some really cool, unique products to the market that compete with the big guys. And I think that anytime we see that kind of shift, we're going to start to see really, really big changes that are going to come from smaller guys, not the big guys.
Do you think we'll see more of that with this increase in demand that's going on, or do you think it's making it harder for companies to start up?
I think that's exactly what it's doing. It's opening up that window where if you're going to do it yourself, you got immediate demand right away that you could fill. But if you're not, you go to Asia and you find the right partner, you're going to struggle. There's no doubt about it. That's going to be a tough road right now if you're not already in the door there, because I think the big guys are going to just start swallowing up any capacity you can. I haven't had any conversations with anybody else that are manufacturing in any of the Asian countries right now, but I can't see it being a very fun place to be right now on lead times and what's happening coming down the road. I mean, it's a beast over there. I'm sure they're in the same position and trying to ramp up as much as they can and getting to capacity, or if not even past capacity, and keeping up. And I'm sure they're dealing with a very similar situation that I am.
Yeah. So I guess it might drive a bit more reshoring of manufacturing, which has got to be a good thing.
Yeah. I think manufacturing overall is again, you know, it's not a very pretty thing to do, and it's can be challenging, but you know, it's a viable business and it's a viable, career that a lot of people should start to look at. I mean, it's not Wall Street, it's not real estate, it's not, you know, sales and so on and so forth, but it, there's a need for it, and people need to start looking at that as an opportunity.
Yeah, cool. And what about the kind of trends that are going on in the industry? Have you had the chance to play around with any, I don't know, e-bikes, mixed wheel size bikes, data acquisition systems, all this kind of stuff? There's a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, this year, yeah, the e-bike thing has hit here in Canada really hard. I've, you know, I've seen how large it was in 16 when I came over for a Eurobike, and I didn't think it was ever going to catch on, but it's definitely a thing. And I even said there's no way we would ever jump down that market, but understanding more and more, it's sparked my curiosity. I don't think it's something that I can push off, and I definitely think we should definitely look into, and I'm accepting it more and more day in, you know, day after day, seeing the people that are riding it, the benefits they're getting out of it, it bringing, you know, the older crowd into the cycling industry, and even the people that aren't really super keen to, you know, slog it out and get fit and go through all that, you know, months after months after months of you know, horrible rides to finally feel good on a bike and just have immediate access. Yeah, it's cool. It's definitely growing the sport. Yeah, and it's just going to have to kind of see where it goes from there. But on the top end, it's a bit of a struggle for me. It's, you know, when you see like e-bike races and like Nico Vujo on e-bikes racing and stuff like that, it's like, I don't know. I think it'll all change if we ever see Steve Pete on that e-bike racing. That'll be the one that really shocks everyone.
Fair play. And what is your daily ride? What are you riding these days?
I've had a plethora of bikes this year. This year was try all the bikes I can to kind of see what I like and what I don't like. I started off the year on a Forbidden Druid, trying out the whole high pivot kind of platform that everybody's on. And Owen's a great guy, and he's designed a really cool, unique bike that I thought was interesting, no doubt about it. It had some quirks and quirks that I had to kind of adjust to, and I think that high pivot's pretty neat. Then I went from that to a Scott Ransom, which was like basically felt like a downhill bike on a 28-pound downhill bike to me. Like I rode the Sun Peaks bike park all year on it and started to get some pretty aggressive times with that bike. It was plenty capable, not super modern geometry, I would say, but like on the verge, long wheelbase, a little bit longer rear end, but very comfortable bike. I think Scott does a great job on their bikes. I was really, really happy with them, ticking pretty much every box off at about 90%. Currently I'm on a little Evil Following, 2020 Evil Following, and I've always been a big fan of that Delta system. And, you know, what Dave Weigel's come up with on that is really cool to see the amount of leverage he gets into that bike and the output it has for the suspension curve. It's very, very unique, and it rides almost like it's a 150, 160 bike, for a little 122.9 or 120 mil rear. And it's very modern geometry, longer front center. It's on the cutting edge, I think, and I've really enjoyed that bike. I've had it for about a month now, and it's really, really interesting the way it behaves. The suspension is always kind of spot on, like I say, but the actual geometry took a bit to get used to, but it's a very playful, fun little bike that I've actually kind of fallen in love with. So yeah, I'm really liking that one too.
It's amazing what you can get away with on some of these modern short travel bikes with the way the geometry helps you out a bit, and the design and the suspension platforms these days.
Yeah. I mean, that bike, I think out of anything, it's so undergunned, but at the same time, with a capable bike handler, you could keep up with the best of them on a 160, 170 bike, no problems. You'd have to be fit to go all day with them, but in fits and spurts, it's a really impressive bike.
Yeah, definitely. And other than wheels and bars, are there any components that you kind of always take with you onto whatever you're riding? Like, are there particular parts about your build or your setup that you are very specific about?
this year I opened the door to anything, from droppers, from all kinds. So, I mean, let's not kid here. We're trying to find OE partners that we would like to work with that aren't something we manufacture. So I did both, SRAM and both Shimano this year, their high-end XT, XTR kits, SRAM's Axis, the new XO. We've been trying some new hubs from different manufacturers to compare against the Hydra, which I still firmly believe is one of the best hubs out there in the market, from Industry 9. You know, did 1UP's dropper post, SDG's dropper post, the Reverb, Fox Transfer. I've done both RockShox and Fox Suspension this year in a 36. Fox Suspension was the first time I've ridden Fox in a long time, and that grip 2 damper in the 36 was very impressive. I think they're at the forefront right now, and it's kind of a bummer because I see all this stuff coming out from EXT, and I really want to try that Formula fork out. I think there's some other cool stuff coming from Olin's that I want to get on, but for the most part, I think it's been kind of everybody's mixed bag right now. And like I say, nobody's making anything that I wouldn't be like, wow, that's amazing. It's like, it's all good.
Yeah. I was going to ask if there was any standout bits of kit from that big chunk of stuff you've been testing. But like you say, a lot of it is just really good these days.
Yeah. I mean, Shimano's new XTR is that's a standout for me, and unbelievable. Okay. Like it is the smoothest shifting under load. Reliability has been great. The range is unbelievable. Shimano's new XTR brakes, definitely was impressed with them. The way the lever feel was, they seem to address the vagueness in the lever, kind of like that, you know, where you lose a little bit of feeling here and there. The touch point, the contact point seems to be very consistent or much better, much improved. I think they've made some strides. The SDG's new seat post has been pretty impressive. Devin, those guys over there have been doing some great stuff. It's the new, you know what, the most impressive thing is Brendan Faircost death grips. Those things are good, awesome. Huh? Yeah, wow. That's
is that a first for you? You've not ridden them before?
First time, and they haven't come off my bikes. I've had three or four pairs now, but I have been meaning to email them because I think they just need to make that little round waffle about maybe 10 centimeters larger, and that grip is the best grip ever made.
Just to get a bit more pressure relief on that area, is that why you'd want to come in board with it?
Yeah, and just a little bit more of that kind of that spongy, grippy feel there, I think. But other than that, I think that those grips are phenomenal. Wow, very well done.
Yeah, that's been my go-to for the last few years, to be fair.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Cool. Well, it's been super interesting catching up, and it sounds like the concussion has been on your side today. You didn't seem to struggle too much through that.
Not stuttering too bad. Yeah, searching for words is always a challenge when you have one of these things, for sure. So yeah, I'm glad that I didn't search for too long.
That was all good. Well, if people want to find out a bit more about We Are One and keep up to date with what you're up to, where's the best place for them to head?
All of our feeds. So Instagram, Facebook, and on our website, weareonecomposites.com. We try to kind of stay in touch with everybody on all those channels right now. We just can't get the guys to do TikTok dances, so we're not really there yet. we tried and tried, but we're just not on point there. So those are the three that we kind of keep to right now.
Nice one. Yeah, we'll put some links in the show notes so people can find that stuff. And you've very kindly got an offer for Downtime listeners as well at the moment.
Yeah, we can continue to follow through with the 15% off with the promo code GIVER15OFF. This is GIVER15OFF, and that'll get you 15% off any product we have on our website.
Awesome. Good stuff. Well, I hope things continue to be busy for you, and that the bike industry keeps going from strength to strength. And yeah, I look forward to seeing where We Are One goes in the next few months, and hopefully seeing a bike maybe kicking around in the early part of next year.
Yeah, let's hope so, Chris. I appreciate all the love you've given us over here at We Are One, and we want to continue supporting what you do. So same thing goes to you. Keep charging forward, and looking forward to hearing more of these podcasts from you in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, Dustin.
Okay, bud. Cheers, eh?
All right, that's it for this episode with Dustin. I hope you've enjoyed listening. A massive thanks to Dustin and We Are One Composites for supporting this episode of the podcast. Don't forget to head to wearonecomposites.com and check out what they have to offer. And as a Downtime listener, you can use the code GIVER15 off for 15% off during September. All the links you need are in the show notes for this episode over on downtimepodcast.com. If you want to represent the show, then grab yourself a new t-shirt by heading over to downtimepodcast.com/shop. You can pick yourself up some new threads and help support the podcast at the same time. This podcast relies on you to tell people about it. So please keep on telling your riding friends, keep sharing the episodes on your social media, and generally being awesome supporters of what I'm doing. If you've got a couple of minutes to leave a review, then that's also really helpful. All right, we're going to have another awesome episode coming up soon, but until then, get out and ride.